More now from The Last Year in the Life of the Beatles, 1969. I'm Paul Ingalls with Harry Norton.
May the 9th, 1969. John, George, and Ringo show up at a recording session, saying they've agreed to make Alan Klein the Beatles' manager and insisting that Paul sign on as well.
They essentially told him he would have to accept Alan Klein as a manager regardless of his feelings, and they signed a contract with Klein, though McCartney declined to put his signature on it. Just about at the same time that that contract was being signed, John Lennon announced he was leaving the group.
Well, I said to Paul, I'm leaving. I knew before I went to Toronto. I told Alan I was leaving. I told Eric Clapton and Klaus that I was leaving and I'd like to probably use them as a group, you know. And I hadn't decided how to do it, to have a permanent new group or what. But I announced it to myself and to the people around me on the way to Toronto a few days before, and on the plane Alan came with me, I told Alan, you know, it's over.
May the 25th, John and Yoko fly to Canada for their second week-long bed-in for peace at the Queen Elizabeth Hotel in Montreal. Doing scores of interviews and recording give peace a chance.
If it works, it's right.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, it's wrong.
Well, nobody's ever given it a chance before, have they? Nobody's ever given peace a complete chance. Gandhi tried it, Martin Luther King tried it, but they were shot. But nobody's given...
You can't get peace in a king-sized divan on floor 802.
We don't expect to, but I mean, we're talking mainly to the revolutionaries who think they can get it overnight by breaking down the buildings, you know. They can't get it. We thought about this for months. This is the best possible, most functional and effective way of promoting and protesting against violence that our minds combined could think of.
Peace, 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 peace.
Peace in your mind, peace on earth, peace at work, peace at home, peace in the world.
We do need discipline. These people need air and space around them. I keep this rule fairly clear. As it develops, we may bring people forward to join in. It's as free as it can be, right?
And then when I got back, there was a few meetings, and Alan had said, well, cool it, because there was a lot to do, you know, business-wise. It wouldn't have been suitable at the time, you know. And then we were discussing something in the office with Paul, and Paul said something or other, like to do something, or, and I kept saying no to everything he said, you see. So it came to a point I had to say something. And Paul said, well, what do you mean then? So I said, I mean, the group's over, I'm leaving. And, but Alan was there, he didn't want me to tell Paul even, you know. And, but I couldn't help, so I told him, it's out, you know, I couldn't stop it, it came out. And Paul and Alan said they were glad that I wasn't going to announce it, that I was going to make an event out of it, you know. Right? But Paul and Alan both... I don't know whether Paul said, don't tell anybody, but he was damn pleased that I wasn't, you know. He said, oh, well, that means nothing really happened if you're not going to say anything. So that's what happened. Well, I mean, like anybody, when you say divorce, you know, the face goes all sorts of colours. It's like he knew all, really, but this was the final thing, you know.
I've got a feeling deep inside, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Round about this time, producer Glyn Johns finishes the production of the Get Back album. It is never officially released in this form, although some copies get out to radio DJs in the United States.
This is Richard Goldman in LA again. The local radio stations in New York City were playing the tape that Phil Spector would end up getting pretty much intact, what became later known as Let It Be Naked. That tape was played over, local FM stations in New York City in the summer of 69, to the best of my recollection. I certainly taped it then, so I had it for all, you know, for almost 10 or 11 months before it would come out in May of 70.
June 7th in London's Hyde Park, the rock supergroup Blind Faith, which includes Eric Clapton, Steve Winwood, and Ginger Baker, plays its first gig in front of 100,000 fans.
June the 18th, Paul McCartney turns 27. About 2 weeks later, on July 1st, he's the only Beatle to show up to begin 2 months of recording that would result in the Abbey Road LP. John Lennon is recovering from a car accident. With a pregnant Yoko, her daughter Kyoto, and his son Julian in the car, John lost control on a ride in Scotland. The car was completely destroyed, the four sustained injuries keeping them hospitalized for 6 days. Still, on the 1st, Paul lays down a final vocal for You Never Give Me Your Money, and the next day, Ringo, George, and Paul record the Carry That Weight chorus.
You never give me your money. You only give me your funny paper. And in the middle of negotiations, you break down.
There's plenty of good stuff in there, and plenty of stuff that, again, suited that moment. You know, You Never Give Me Your Money. I mean, all of the fighting that the Beatles were doing, you know, Carry That Weight. You know, this sense of a grand statement about what the history of that band was.
July 4th, Give Peace a Chance, recorded by John and friends during the Montreal Bed-In in May, is released under the name of the Plastic Ono Band. The next day, Electronic Sound, a side project album by George Harrison, is released. 2 days later, Ringo Starr turns 29, and on the same day, the Apple-labeled single, That's the Way God Planned It, by Beatle friend Billy Preston, is released in the United States. July 7th and 8th, the Beatles, still missing John Lennon, record multiple takes of George Harrison's Here Comes the Sun.
This is Beatle author Richie Unterberger in San Francisco. You really feel George Harrison finally becoming the equal of John Lennon and Paul McCartney as a songwriter, not just a good songwriter, but, you know, there's no way he can be as good as John and Paul, which is the case for the other Beatles albums. He's approached the same level with Here Comes the Sun and Something. And theoretically, it would have been interesting if the Beatles could have done at least one or two more albums and had been doing as many George Harrison songs as Lennon McCartney songs, how that would have worked out. Of course, we know that didn't come to be.
Here comes the sun, here comes the sun, I say it's all right.
July 9th, John Lennon returns to the studio following his car crash recuperation. A bed is set up in the studios so Yoko, more seriously hurt and pregnant, can be with John while he records. On the same day, a new lead vocal by George and backing vocals by Paul are added to Something.
You're asking me, will my love grow?
Thank you.
Hi, it's John Spurney again in New York. This is the album where Harrison really comes into his own, and his two songs are not only arguably the best songs on the record, but they're also arguably some of the best Beatles songs ever. There's something so classic about the melody and the structure of it. And in fact, you know, Frank Sinatra called it his favorite Beatles song.
July 20th, 1969.
Neil, yes, we are getting a TV picture. You're in our field of view now.
I'm going to step off the limb. It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
July 21st. John brings in his first song since The Ballad of John and Yoko for the band. A first take of Come Together is recorded.
He come all flat top, he come grooving up slowly. He got two eyeballs, he's one holy roller. He's got head down to his knees. He's got to be a joker, he just do what he please. Shoot!
Others were there, such as Jeff Emmerich, the engineer who wrote a wonderful book about his life with the Beatles called Here, There, and Everywhere, and George Martin, the producer. They've all noted that with Lennon's return, a lot of the tension returned. Lennon was a dominating, strong personality. He could be quite intimidating, and he was clearly a moody person. He was probably the only person on Earth up to that point that could really intimidate Paul McCartney. He had a deep and rancorous arguments with McCartney during the sessions. Even though Lennon felt it was okay for himself to miss recording sessions, he did not feel it was okay for Paul to. And on one occasion when Paul failed to come to the session, Lennon drove over to his house, and they got into a pretty serious row in which Lennon broke apart a painting that he'd given McCartney as a present.
Look out! He's back productions! He got Walrus scum boots! He got
It does make you regret that they couldn't hang together for at least another album or two, because even at one of the lower points in their creativity, they were still coming up with so many songs so constantly that you think, well, there had to be room for some more material to emerge from these guys. But also, in hindsight, it just was not meant to be. There were too many tensions at work, both musically and personally, and unfortunately from the business end, especially when Alan Klein took over the affairs of three of the four Beatles. Looking back, it's hard to imagine it could have lasted any longer than it did.
I presumed that I would just be able to carry on and just bring Yoko into our life, but it seemed that I had to be married to them or Yoko, and I chose Yoko, you know, and I was right.
In the beginning, you were too much in love to notice.
Yeah, we were in our own dream, you know. But I mean, they're the kind of idiots that really think that Yoko split the Beatles, probably, or Alan, you know. It's the same joke, you know.
I think the greater problem, though, occurred within the dynamics of the four Beatles themselves. As Yoko Ono herself said at one point, they were too strong as people and too strong as a unit for an outside element to defeat them and to defeat their unity. George Harrison had tired of the Beatles. John Lennon was going through a range of emotions and desires and intentions. And Paul McCartney found himself bound to a group that was coming apart and a business that he did not want to be aligned with Alan Klein. So that combination of pressures, plus so many other internal conflicts between Lennon and McCartney, began the real end game of the Beatles' days.
You're listening to The Last Year in the Life of the Beatles. More after this break.